An Indiana man threatened by ISIS. What can be done? Gay marriage is legal in Indiana. The selection process for Marion County judges is ruled unconstitutional, and Mike Pence leads a trade mission to Canada. That plus political ads, a monument to peace, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending October 10, 2014.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, an Indiana man is the latest captive threatened with beheading by ISIS. Abdul Rahman Kasig, formerly known as Peter Kasig, was an aid worker in Syria when he was captured, and his family is asking people to honor their son by supporting organizations that work with refugees in that country. The family released a letter after attending a prayer vigil at Butler University. Hundreds of people were there. Friends, including Todd Hill and Joe Dages, talked about Kasig's dedication to helping the people of Syria.
He knew that there were risks, obviously, in going to that area, and I think it just speaks to his character of who he is, that in the face of all that danger, he accepted that all of those things might happen, and he still wanted to help those. And I think that's the legacy that he has built and will hopefully continue to build.
I think he very much went into the region with eyes wide open and decided that the benefits he could provide a suffering people outweighed those risks for him.
Are the terrorists paying attention to what's happening here? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm WishTV Statehouse reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, the Kasig family is also using social media in an effort to negotiate with ISIS. Is that a good idea?
I'm a mother of a son around the same age. They must be going through agony. I don't know how you deal with the kind of inhumane people that this ISIS group are, so you do everything you can, because the alternative is so unattractive. It's just, and I assume the government's trying to do everything they can to locate him, but we're talking about a vast area and very few clues, and it's just a heartbreaking situation. I mean, here is a kid not even fighting, but trying to help. And they treat him as if he's the enemy. It's just, they're animals.
In previous cases, it's been reported that the government told families not to try to negotiate with these people. The government's not speaking at the moment. But could this be the wrong approach?
I agree with Ann. I think if that was your son, you would do everything in your power to try to ask for mercy in this situation. And what's troubling about this is not only the situation itself. I mean, we have to be committed in this country long haul to do away with this operation and do what we can to stop these folks, because they're clearly barbaric, out of control, and they're doing everything they can to inflict terror on the entire world at this point. But we have to do what we can to get that in place. But I don't blame the parents at all for trying to do what they can to ask for mercy in this case. So far, it hasn't worked for the others who've been in the same situation, and we can only pray that they will this time. I mean, the mere fact that this young man found that particular religion while he was there, changed his name, doing things that he thinks was important to try to help the refugees in that country, ought to be the kind of people that they should be embracing, not trying to kill. And that's what's so troubling about this, because I think his biggest crime was he was an American.
And I think that his circumstance helps bring this home for a lot of Americans who maybe didn't pay close attention previously.
That's probably true. I mean, clearly the tragedies that have unfolded through social media are so heinous that it's really, I think, struck home in a way, in the worst way possible for a lot of Americans. And that's why I think you saw so much willingness on the part of a usually divided Congress to back the action as quickly as it did. Clearly, there's those who want to see even greater military action against this group, and that may be possible and likely even at some point. But in the meantime, I'll agree with what Ann and Mike have said. You can't fault these parents for. I think any of us would do the same sort of thing. And when you alluded, I think, Jim, to other American hostages whose parents and families have been advised or rebuked by portions of the federal government. James Foley's parents say that they were threatened with federal prosecution if they had tried to raise money privately. Talk about somebody who doesn't get the optics of this situation. Whoever that government official was,
should be fired
because that's insanity.
That is what I was referring to. It is nice to see the community rally around this family.
You know, what struck me about that was the reaction of his friends. The way that they understand exactly what it is that he was about and is about. I think the thing that comes from this is that the handling of his captors and the way they are going about this betrays, of course, their position and the evil nature of what it is that they're trying to do. It's important to remember that they see Americans as enemies and we see them as an enemy. And that's clearly the case in these limited situations sometimes. But societies overall have to overcome this evil, both in Syria, in the Middle East, and in the United States. I hope that he is returned safely. I hope that his friends are able to be with him again. And I hope that the message that they express, the help and the benefit that he was trying to bring to people who need it desperately, is the one that carries the day.
Moving on, the U.S. Supreme Court this week decided that it would let lower court rulings on gay marriage stand. It means gay marriage is legal in Indiana. Ken Falk of the ACLU led a celebration.
I'm just really proud of my state that this is finally happening.
This is over, and same-sex marriage is now a reality.
Mike McDaniel, is the marriage battle over?
I think so. There's still a chance that the one Southern Circuit might rule something in another way that would cause the Supreme Court to reconsider down the road.
And bring the Indiana case back to life.
And bring it back to life. But I think that's a long time off, and subsequently it's over for now. And I think the governor said it right when he said, look, you know, we can disagree with the court, but you can't not
disobey
the law.
Yeah.
And I think that's right. And I think, it's time for everybody to move on. They were trying their best to force the issue to get a resolution from the Supreme Court. No, I don't think anybody really expected it to be quite this way, but they got the resolution they were looking for.
Ann predicted it last
week.
Well,
she predicted it last week, but over the course of the last 2 years, we've all said on this show over and over again.
I do think Ann said earlier this year that it wouldn't be this year, it might be next year.
Unanimous circuits does that.
The governor says the courts have spoken. The attorney general has said essentially the same thing. Senate President Pro Tem David Long says it's time to move on. So. Will we see an attempt to keep this alive in the General Assembly?
I hope not, because the issue is settled. Next year, we won't even be talking about this. There won't be a split in the circuits. The issue's decided. It's the law of the land. But I think what you'll see from some people in the legislature is an attempt to have a Freedom of Religion Act of some kind or other that says that you can't be forced to take pictures at a gay wedding, or you can't be forced to cater to a reception for. And they ought to let that go. This is the law of the land, and it is time to move on and solve Indiana's real problems instead of making war and discriminating against people.
One thing that impresses me is how normal this has become already. In June, when we had gay marriage legal for 3 days, you saw over 500 couples go line up, long lines to get marriage licenses. There have been fewer than 50 who applied now because they know they don't have to rush.
Well, and apparently, Jim, you told me earlier that there are people who are seeking divorces.
Three or four of them filed in Marion County already.
So, you know,
same-sex divorce.
It has become just part of the normal day-to-day in Indiana and Marion County, and as it should be. Because it is a settled law, with the exception that Mike talked about, which I would say is a very long shot. The court's been very clear in its decision not to make a decision. So I think that's the way it should be. You know, if you have a disagreement or you don't like it, that's fine. You don't have to participate in it. But that's the way it's the law of the land. It's the way it should be.
Big surprise, though, that the Supreme Court didn't take this up. I mean,
yeah.
Ann was standing. The experts have been saying for months on both sides that it's got to go to the Supreme Court. And did the Supreme Court?
In a way, it did.
Yeah.
I mean, it went to the Supreme Court.
It did.
And then it came right back.
Mm-hmm. Right?
I'm no legal expert, but I certainly thought that it would, in fact, go to have that final determination. And I think the conventional wisdom was that it would have been, the outcome would have been largely the same. And as I mentioned last week, I didn't think it would be even 5-4. It would be actually at least 6 in the majority. So this gets largely the same thing done. I mean, you're right. There are this could happen, and then it could be back to square one. But as a practical matter, you look at how many individuals, couples now will have been joined in matrimony. From a practical standpoint, forget the legal theory and the machinations here. It seems to me, just logically, that it's a lot harder to undo.
It's going to be very
when you have that.
I think it's worth remembering that, you know, the court is actually following public opinion on this rather than, you know, dictating a decision that public opinion has to follow. And I think that's why we see a more natural acceptance of this, and the trends are only moving in that direction in the public anyway.
I don't think the other circuit's going to do anything with this, because it's pretty clear that if it does go to the Supreme Court, the decision will be the same, that gay marriage will be the law of the land. So I don't see a circuit court judge willing to sign off on an opinion that he knows the Supreme Court's going to overrule.
Well, the only problem with them handling it this way is you still have 20 states out there who are in limbo.
True.
And that, and until each of those states are brought in proceedings that deal with it, you're going to have to go that way until somebody does something different.
All right, there's another big ruling from Federal District Court Judge Richard Young this week. He found the method of electing judges in Marion County unconstitutional, saying defendants, including the governor, could not justify taking away candidate choices from voters. The method called for Republicans and Democrats to each choose half the seats to be filled on the Marion Superior Court. John Katzenberger, who benefits from this ruling?
Well, I think if you look at the case itself, the court believes that voters will benefit from the ruling. They'll have a direct say, or should have a direct say, in who mans the courts and who the judges in this county are. It's a completely unique system. According to the decision, there is no other system like this in the country. So, you know, they found it's unconstitutional. I think we're going to see massive changes in how Marion County determines who its judges are, and it's going to have big implications for the political parties in this county.
But that's not going to happen anytime soon, because the judge, interesting to me, waited until closer than 30 days to the election and then issued this ruling along with a 30-day stay, so it won't affect the November election. It won't affect an election until 4 years from now.
Yeah, effectively, yeah, you do have a 4-year window, which suggests to me that deadlines being what they are for journalists and lawmakers, there's plenty of time to dawdle and look at various options. And there are various options. I mean, you look at, say, Lake County and St. Joe County, which have a merit-based system. You look at Vandenberg.
In that case, it's a committee and the governor deciding, right? And so it doesn't go to the voters.
But you also have then a Vandenberg.
It's also been determined as constitutional, though.
Right. Yeah.
I think Vandenberg County has a nonpartisan election. So, I mean, there are other ways to do this. If the concern is, well, there are several concerns. This addressed one concern, which is, letting people actually vote
have
if, in fact,
have a choice.
Have a choice. The other factor that many people in and around the judiciary would be concerned with is the influence of political parties and the right. notion that it's pay to play. And I know the person who lobbies for the judges is laughing over there, but
he's also a leader in the Republican Party. Does this hurt the parties?
Does it hurt the parties? Of course, I thought the system worked fine. And no, I did. Yeah. I thought it was crafted by the two parties in Marion County, came together to put this structure together. And what's interesting about this particular case to me was, unlike the marriage question or something like that, there was no public outcry to change the system.
Common cause brought this
right.
lawsuit.
And so it's unique in that way. But I thought the most pragmatic thing that the judge did here was the fact that he waited within the 30-day window and didn't stay, because he knew you would either have to have special elections, which would cost a lot of money to do, or he's going to let them get through this election cycle, then they got 4 years to change it. And because of the makeup of the legislature being what it is and probably will be for a while, I don't know what they're going to come up with for a system, but I would imagine it's going to be some kind of a hybrid where you've got recommendations made and the governor will probably pick them.
You have another issue here, too, and that is that the attorney general, who says that every statute that's ruled unconstitutional has got to be appealed.
And he could do that.
He
and
has
he
to
might.
Do that.
He might.
I mean, if well, he wasn't, if he was truthing us before about appealing gay marriage and about appealing the right to work because he has a statutory obligation, then he has to do
it now.
And
I hope he does.
And then if it's affirmed on appeal to the Seventh Circuit, remember that they've already been scathing in about small claims courts. So my husband and the rest of the Judiciary Committee is going to have a lot of work to do to try to craft a system here that's equitable and consistent with the judge's ruling.
What's funny about this to me is that if they would go to an all election system, there would be more money involved in the election
that's
of
true.
Judges than there is now.
Yeah.
You would have the most money.
Like, your initial question, Jim, was who's the winner here?
Yeah.
We should point out that the ACLU now was filed the suit on behalf of Common Cause and was also the winner in the last case we talked about. Not a bad batting average this week.
They seem to do very well in front of Judge Young.
Well, maybe we'll see how the Attorney General can improve his record in front of the Seventh Circuit when he appeals.
Mike Pence went on his fourth foreign trade mission as governor this week as he led a delegation to Canada. The biggest accomplishment of the trip is the announcement by Scott Barrett Foods that will expand a plant in Lebanon with the help of state tax credits and training grants. The specialty foods manufacturer already employs 325 in Lebanon and will add almost 100 more to go along with a $44 million investment. The governor explained his role in the deal in a phone call from Toronto.
Was it necessary for you to be there to seal the deal?
I don't think it was necessary to be here to seal the deal, but I think it was important to be here to seal the deal. The ability to travel to all points on the map to tell Indiana's story is something that I consider not only a privilege, but I consider really an important aspect of my job as governor.
John Schwanes, is Mike Pence taking a more aggressive approach to job creation than previous governors?
No, I'm not sure.
Or to foreign travel?
No, I'd say no to both. I would say that you go back to, I see where you're coming from, but let me say that if you go back to
They've all taken an annual trip, usually to Southeast Asia, but this year he's been to Germany, to England, and now Canada, if that counts.
Well, I think there's no...
It's still foreign.
There's no doubt that, you know, we hear so much about the global economy and, as Tom Friedman would say, the flat world.
Yeah.
That's true. So I think that it is incumbent on governors, not only of Indiana, but every state that wants to engage in international trade, to be more visible. But I think, in fairness, if you go back to Mitch Daniels, if you go back to Evan Bayh, and if you go back to, I mean, name it all, Frank O'Bannon and Bob Orr, this model has been set for Indiana governors for some time.
But he's approaching it differently, isn't he?
Well, he is going to some different places. There's no question about that. And you talked about where he's gone. But I agree. I think that the model that was set really and initiated by Governor Orr and John Mutz and the success that has had over the years is something that they continue to nurture because that direct foreign investment is incredibly important for the economy here.
100 jobs, is that worth a trip?
Anything he can do to generate some jobs and hopefully jobs that pay enough so that our income can finally grow is a good thing.
Just because the public's not getting the full story here, I want to make sure.
Go right ahead.
I will. It was a one-day trip to Toronto.
Right, right.
They met with the Council General of Canada. They met with the Prime Minister of Ontario. They met with a company who was talking about investing in Indiana companies.
They talked to venture capital firm.
They had an event at the first Maple Leafs game of the year
right.
for people who were thinking about investing in Indiana.
I think they had 11 meetings overall.
Right, in yeah. one day. Have you worked one day that this month that hard?
I'm not sure
every day. Every day this month.
I don't think the governor made it to all 11 meetings.
My point is this. It's a trip to Canada. They're our biggest export market for the state of Indiana.
It's true.
And they probably don't go there enough. It probably should have been a week-long trip, not a one-day trip. I think it was very
Maybe when ski season starts.
He has had a Molson and a Canadian Club in the same day. Yeah. I think so. That.
To politics, where the first statewide political ads of the 2014 campaign hit the airwaves this week.
Sometimes shorter is better.
Democrat Beth White's ad in the race for Secretary of State broke the ice before it hit the air. The only political ads of the season were targeted to smaller audiences on cable TV channels.
I know everybody needs to get out and vote. Every vote counts.
We found Porter Anderson voting at the City County building. He's keyed into the election, but there are not many like him. In the first day of early voting, there were 112 voters compared to 164 in 2010, the last off-year election. It means voting is off by almost a third.
I haven't seen a lot of yard signs. I haven't seen a lot of interest, if you're right.
And yet you're voting.
Absolutely. Always do.
In May, only 13% of the voters went to the polls statewide. Here in Marion County, just 8% showed up. Even though it's an off-year election, that's still a big contrast to what happened in 2008 when there were long lines for both early voting and on Election Day. But in case you care, more ads are coming. Suzanne Crouch, the Republican running for state auditor, is now on the air.
So when you see the red glasses, remember, Suzanne Crouch is looking out for you.
And if you want to vote, there's no waiting.
Mike McDaniel, is this the worst election season in memory?
Well, keep in mind that in the primary election, we had, 12% voted statewide and 8% in Marion County?
Yeah.
And obviously the problem is because you don't have a presidential race or
a Senate race or governor. Yeah.
That people are less likely to go to the polls on Election Day. That's clear. But as far as these candidates, you expect all of them to be on the air in the last 25 days, which they all will be next week. And so, but the problem you got with these campaigns is, can they buy enough time to really penetrate the consciousness of the public to make a difference? And from what I've seen of these buys, and I have looked at these buys, there's not much there yet. So
although,
they're going to have to really ramp
here's
it
something,
up
here's something,
to get anybody's attention.
Well, here's something you will see. You'll see more ads in the Indianapolis market because Louisville and Evansville are very expensive because of the Kentucky Senate race.
Well, yeah, that's right. And congressional races also.
Right.
I don't know why this is a surprise. We've put as many barriers in front of voting as we possibly can. We have to have the ID. We don't have convenient hours. We don't have remote locations and like other counties do. It's exactly what you get.
You can vote for a month now.
A year or so, we thought that the big ticket item on the ballot might be the same-sex marriage amendment.
That's true.
I think there's something to that. It'll be interesting to see who comes out because Beth White has been very clearly identified with same-sex marriage and being pro all of that. And if it'll be interesting to see if the people who are benefiting from that support turn out for her in the election.
Mm-hmm. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, do you wish there was more political activity this year? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, ask me on November 5th. Last week's question was, should the Indy 500 TV blackout remain in place? 15% said yes, 85% said no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Finally, a new sculpture is now on display at the Indianapolis Central Library. It's called the Peace Dove. Marion County Sheriff John Layton envisioned the Peace Dove after he saw too many mothers crying over children lost to senseless violence. The artwork is a custom metal sculpture made out of parts of firearms. It was created by artist and Indianapolis firefighter Ryan Feeney.
Being on the fire department, being a first responder, I see before anybody else the victims. And it means quite a bit as I cut these apart, knowing that those will never hit the street again.
Will that have an effect on others?
I hope so. I mean, it's a pretty powerful sculpture, I thought, very well done, and the concept is terrific, and I just hope more young people realize just how dangerous it is to carry weapons.
Art that makes you think.
I think it's a beautiful piece of art. I hope they put it on the lawn of the Central Library because that's a prominent spot that a lot of people will see and for people to enjoy for years to come.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shello of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.